tossing aside the ones he'd been fighting in. He did, however, shoot Syl another glare as she flew over to him.
Adolin, Kaladin said as he changed. Your first thought was to get Adolin?
I needed someone you couldn't intimidate, she replied. That list at best includes three people, and the queen was likely to transform you into a crystal goblet or something.
Kaladin sighed and walked out to join Adolin, lest the High Prince think he was dallying. Syl eyed Kaladin as she walked in the air alongside him, keeping up with him despite her dainty steps.
Thank you, Kaladin said softly, turning his eyes forward.
Adolin made good on his promise. He didn't force Kaladin to say much. Together, they made their way to the Ten Rings, a section of the tower's central market where the merchants had agreed to lay their shops out according to Navani's plan. In exchange, they got a deal on taxes, and new guard patrols would be frequent and courteous. Rows of wooden storefronts here made neat, orderly streets. The shops were of similar sizes and dimensions, with storage and housing on top. The place felt quaint, an island of order contrasting with the more organic, chaotic feeling of the rest of the breakaway market, where after a year, many people still used tents instead of permanent structures. Admittedly, it did feel strange to have rows of permanent structures built in the middle of a several stories high interior room. The oddest part to Kaladin was that the most upscale shops, catering to the richest of the light-eyed families, had refused Navani's invitation, exactly as the seedier shops had. Neither wanted to agree to her oversight. The rich shops were all outside the market, in a series of rooms along a hallway nearby. The upshot was that while the Ten Rings wasn't terribly upscale, it was reputable. Two concepts that weren't necessarily the same thing. Adolin's favorite winehouse was called Jez's Duty. He'd forced Kaladin to join him there on more than one occasion, and so the interior was familiar. Themed after a storm shelter, though no such thing was needed here in the tower, it had fabrial clocks on the walls that listed when a storm was happening in Alethkar and held a daily vigil for the kingdom. An Ardent even visited and burned glyph wards. Barring that, it could be a raucous place, more of a tavern than a winehouse. Adolin had a reserved booth at the rear. It was a mark of pride that the High Prince frequented this location rather than more upscale winehouses. That was the sort of thing Adolin did. Nobody bowed when he entered. Instead, they cheered and raised cups. Adolin Colin wasn't some distant bright lord or general who sat in his keep and pronounced edicts, tyrannical or wise. He was the type of general who drank with his men and learned the names of every soldier. Delinar disapproved. In most cases, Kaladin would have as well. But this was Adolin. He'd have gone mad if he'd been forced to remain aloof. It went against every traditional Alethi protocol of leadership, but Adolin made it work. So who was Kaladin to judge? As Adolin went to greet people, Kaladin made his way around the perimeter of the room, noting the larger-than-usual crowd. Was that Rock over there with his family, drinking mugs of Horn-Eater mud beer? He said he had an appointment tonight, Kaladin remembered. Indeed, some sort of celebration seemed to be going on. A few other Windrunners and Radiants he knew were in attendance, though not many. Mostly it seemed to be common folk, perhaps a higher-than-normal percentage of soldiers. Syl took off to begin poking through the room, looking at each table. Though he'd once seen her fascination as childlike, he'd evolved on that idea. She was just curious, desirous to learn. If that was childlike, then everyone needed more of it. She was fascinated by human beings. In a room like this one, Kaladin would often find her standing on a crowded table, unseen by the occupants, head cocked as she tried to imitate the mannerisms or expressions of one person or another. Adolin's booth was occupied by a young woman with long, dark hair, wearing trousers and a buttoned shirt. Her long white coat hung on the peg nearby. She had her hat on, the wide-brimmed one with the peaked front. Vale, Kaladin said, sliding into the booth.
You going to have you all night, or will Shallan show up?
Probably just me, Vale said, tipping back her cup to reach the last of her drink. Shallan had a busy day, and we're on Shattered Plains time, not Urethiru time. She wants a rest.
It must be nice, Kaladin thought, to be able to retreat and become someone else when you get tired. It was sometimes difficult to treat Shallan's personas as three distinct people, but it was what she seemed to prefer. Fortunately, she tended to change her hair color to give the rest of them cues. Black for Vale, and she'd started using blonde for Radiant. A young barmaid came by, refilling Vale's cup with something deep red.
And you? The serving girl asked Kaladin.
Orange, he said softly. Chilled, if you have it.
Orange, the girl said. A man like you can stomach something stronger. It's a party. We've got a nice yellow infused with pekka, an Azish fruit. Hey, Vale said, putting her boots on the table with a thump. The man said orange. I just thought, bring him what he asked for. That's all you need to think about.
Flustered, the girl scampered off. Kaladin nodded to Vale in thanks, though he wished people wouldn't stick up for him quite so zealously. He could speak for himself. As long as Dalinar followed the strictest interpretation of the codes of war, so would Kaladin. And barring that, well, his friends knew. When Kaladin was in one of his moods, alcohol, for all that it seemed it would help him forget his pain, always made the darkness worse. He could use Stormlight to burn off the effects, but once he had a drink or two in him, he often didn't want to, or felt he didn't deserve to. Same difference.
So, Vale said, I hear your mission went well? An entire town stolen right out from underneath their storming noses? The Mink himself rescued. Heads will roll in Kulinar when Odium hears about this.
I doubt he cares much about one town, Kaladin said, and they don't know we got the Mink.
Regardless, Vale said, lifting her cup to him.
And you? Kaladin asked. She leaned forward, taking her boots off the table.
You should have seen it. ELA was basically a skeleton, withered away. We'd defeated her before we arrived, but it sure was satisfying to bring her down, I'm sure.
Pity someone murdered her, Vale said. I'd have enjoyed watching her squirm before Dalinar. Murdered her, Kaladin said. What?
Yeah, someone offed her. One of our people, unfortunately. They must have been bribed by someone who wanted to see her dead. That's a secret, by the way. We're telling everyone she killed herself.
Kaladin glanced around.
Nobody will hear in here, Vale said. Our booth is isolated.
Still, don't discuss military secrets in public. Vale rolled her eyes, but then she shook her head, and her hair blended to blonde, and she sat up straighter.
Do get a full report from Dalinar later, Kaladin. There are oddities about the event that trouble me.
Kaladin said. We'll see. You share Vale's opinion that Shallan is fine? She merely needs a rest?
She is well enough, Radiant said. We've found a balance. A year now, without any new personas forming. Except,
Kaladin raised an eyebrow.
There are some half-formed, Radiant said, turning away. They wait to see if the three really can work, or if it could crumble, letting them out. They aren't real, not as real as I am, and yet,
she met Kaladin's eyes.
Shallan wouldn't wish me to share that much. But as her friend, you should know.
I'm not sure if I can help, Kaladin said. I can barely keep a handle on my own problems these days.
You being here helps, Radiant said.
Did it? When Kaladin was in moods like this, he felt that he would bring only darkness to those around him. Why would they want to be with him? He wouldn't want to be with him. But he supposed this was the sort of thing Radiant had to say. It was what made her distinct from the others. She smiled as Adolin returned, then shook her head, hair bleeding to black. She leaned back, relaxed. How nice it must be to transform into Vale with her laid-back attitude. As Adolin was settling down, the barmaid returned with Kaladin's drink.
If you decide you want to try that yellow, she said to Kaladin.
Thanks, Mel, Adolin said quickly, but he doesn't need anything to drink today.
The barmaid gave him a radiant smile. Married man or not, they still treated him that way, and floated off, seeming encouraged by the fact that the High Prince had spoken to her, although he'd basically given her a reprimand.
How's the groom?
Vale asked, getting out her dagger and balancing it on the end of her fingertip.
Befuddled, Adolin said.
Groom?
Kaladin asked.
Wedding party? Adolin said, waving toward the room of festive people. For Jor?
Who? Kaladin asked.
Kaladin, Adolin said. We've been coming to this place for 8 months.
Don't bother, Adolin, Vale said.
Kaladin doesn't notice people unless they've pulled a weapon on him.
He notices, Adolin said. He cares. But Kaladin's a soldier, and he thinks like one. Right, Bridge Boy?
I have no idea what you mean, Kaladin grumbled, sipping his drink.
You've learned to worry about your squad, Adolin said, and to cut out extraneous information. I'll bet Kaladin could tell you the age, eye color, and favorite food of everyone serving beneath him. But he's not going to bother with remembering the names of the bar staff. Father's the same way.
Well, Vale said, this is real fun and everything, but shouldn't we be moving on to a more important topic?
Such as? Adolin asked.
Such as who we're going to fix Kaladin up with next.
Kaladin about spat out his drink.
He doesn't need fixing up with anyone. That's not what Syl says,
Vale replied. Syl used to think human children came out through the nose in a particularly violent sneeze, Kaladin said. She is not an authority on this topic.
Their table said, vibrating with a soft buzzing sound.
How do they come out? I've always wondered.
Kaladin started, only now realizing that Pattern dimpled part of the wooden tabletop. Pattern didn't go about invisibly as Syl did, but somehow infused the material of objects nearby. If you focused on him now, you'd see a section of the tabletop that seemed to be carved into a circular pattern, one that somehow moved and flowed, like ripples in a cistern.
I'll explain babies later, Pattern, Vale said. It's more complicated than you're probably imagining. Wait, no. Ask Shallan to explain. She'll love that.
The table said. She changes colors like a sunset or an infected wound.
Adolin relaxed, resting his arm along the back of the bar seat, but not putting it around Vale. The two of them had a weird relationship when Shallan was wearing Radiant or Vale. At least they seemed to have mostly gotten over the part where they acted like lovesick fools all the time.
The ladies have a point, Bridge Boy, Adolin said to him. You have been extra sulky since Lynn broke up with you.
This isn't about that.
Still, a fling couldn't hurt, right?
Vale said. She nodded her chin toward one of the passing barmaids, a tall young woman with unusually light hair.
What about him over there?
She's tall.
Great. Tall, Kaladin said. Because we both measure roughly the same in inches, we're sure to get along. Think of all the tall person topics of conversation we could engage in. Like,
Oh, don't be sour, Vale said, smacking him on the shoulder. You didn't even glance at her. She's cute. Look at those legs. Back me up, Adolin.
She's attractive, he said, but that blouse is terrible on her. I need to tell Moni that the house uniforms here are dreadful. They should at least have two different shades to match different skin tones.
What about Ka's sister? Vale said to Kaladin. You've met her, right?
She's smart. You like smart girls.
Is there really anyone who doesn't like smart girls? Kaladin said.
Me, Vale said, raising her hand. Give me dumb ones, please. They're so easy to impress.
Smart girls, Adolin said, rubbing his chin. It's too bad Scar snatched up Ristina. They'd have been a good match.
Adolin, Vale said, Ristina is like 3 feet tall.
So, Adolin said, you heard Kaladin. He doesn't care about height.
Yeah, well, most women do. You've got to find someone who matches him. Too bad he screwed up his chance with Lynn.
I didn't, Kaladin protested. What about her? Adolin said, pointing as someone new entered the tavern. A couple of light-eyed women in havas, though they probably weren't of high rank if they were visiting a wine house frequented by dark eyes. Then again, Adolin was here, and things like non and rank had been strangely less divisive this last year under Jasnah's rule. One of the two newcomers was a younger woman with a luscious figure, accentuated by the tight haba. She had dark skin and red lips, clearly brightened with lip paint.
Dahna, Adolin said.
She's the daughter of one of father's generals, Cal.
She loves talking strategy.
She's acted as scribe in his war meetings since she was 14. I can introduce you.
Please don't, Kaladin said.
Dahna, Vale said. You courted her, didn't you?
Yeah. How'd you know?
Adolin, dear. Swing a Herdazian in a crowded room and you'll hit 6 women you courted.
She narrowed her eyes at the newcomer.
Those aren't real, are they? She pads, right?
Adolin shook his head.
Seriously? Vale said. Stormfather. To get mine that big, I'd have to eat 6 chulls. How do they feel?
You're making assumptions, Adolin said.
She glared at him, then poked him in the shoulder.
Come on.
He turned eyes toward the ceiling and pointedly took a drink, though he smiled as she poked him again.
This is not a topic for gentlemen to discuss, he said with an airy tone.
I'm neither gentle nor a man, Vale said. I'm your wife.
You're not my wife.
I share a body with your wife, close enough.
You two, Kaladin said, have the strangest relationship.
Adolin gave him a slow nod that seemed to say, you have no idea. Vale downed the rest of her drink, then upended the empty cup.
Where's that storming barmaid?
You sure you haven't had enough?
Adolin asked.
Am I sitting up straight?
A vague approximation.
There's your answer,
she said, sliding out of the booth by moving over him in a maneuver that involved a lot of her touching a lot of him, then went picking through the crowd for the barmaid.
She's in rare form today, Kaladin noted.
Vale has been cooped up for a month, pretending to be that woman in the war camps, he replied. And Radiant stressed greatly about this mission. The few times we managed to meet, Shallan was practically crawling up the walls with tension. This is her way of letting loose.
Well, if it worked for them.
Is Ile Satius really dead? Unfortunately, Father already has armies moving to the war camps. Initial reports say her men have offered articles of surrender. They must have known this was coming. He shrugged. Still makes me feel like I've failed.
You had to do something. That group was getting too powerful, too dangerous to leave alone.
I know, but I hate the idea of fighting our own. We're supposed to be moving on to better things, greater things.
Says the man who killed Satius, Kaladin thought.
That wasn't common knowledge yet, so he didn't speak it out loud in case someone was listening. Their conversation lapsed. Kaladin played with his cup, wishing for a refill, though he wasn't about to go fighting through the crowd to find one. People were taking turns cheering for Jor, and as the groom himself passed by, Kaladin realized he did recognize the man. He was the house bouncer, an affable fellow. Syl was riding on his shoulder. Vale's quest ran long. Kaladin thought he spotted her over at one corner playing a game of breakneck for chips. He was surprised there was anyone left in the city who would still play against Vale. Eventually, Adolin scooted a little closer. He had his own drink, an intoxicating violet, but he'd barely made his way through half the cup. He no longer strictly followed the codes, but he seemed to have found his own balance. So, Adolin said, what's going on? This is more than just what happened with Lynn. I thought you said I didn't have to talk. You don't. Adolin took a sip, waiting. Kaladin stared at the table. Shallan often carved parts of it, so the wood here was etched with small but intricate art projects, many of them half-finished. He ran his finger across one that depicted an axe hound and a man who looked remarkably like Adolin. Your father relieved me of active duty today, Kaladin said. He thinks I'm not fit to see battle any longer. Adolin let out a long exhalation. That storming man. He's right, Adolin, Kaladin said. Remember how you had to pull me out of the palace last year? Everyone gets overwhelmed in a fight sometimes, Adolin said. I've gotten disoriented before, even in Shardplate. This is worse, and more frequent. I'm a surgeon, Adolin. I've trained to spot problems like these, so I know he's right. I've known for months. Very well, Adolin said. He nodded curtly. So it is. What are we going to do about it? How do you get better? You don't. Dabbed, the guy in my crew, the one who doesn't talk. Battle shock, like mine. He's been like that since I recruited him. Adolin fell silent. Kaladin could see him sort through potential responses. Adolin was many things, but hard to read would never be one of them. Fortunately, he didn't make any of the expected comments. No simple affirmations, no encouragement for Kaladin to cheer up or soldier on. The two of them sat quietly in the loud room for a long pause. Then eventually, Adolin spoke. My father can be wrong, you know. Kaladin shrugged. He's human, Adolin said. Half the city thinks he's some kind of herald reborn. But he's only a man. He's been wrong before. Terribly wrong. Dalinar killed Adolin's mother, Kaladin thought. That news was out, spread wide. The city had all either read, listened to, or been told about Dalinar's strange autobiography. Handwritten by the Blackthorn himself, it wasn't quite finished, but drafts had been shared. In it, Dalinar confessed to many things, including the accidental killing of his wife. I'm not a surgeon, Adolin said, and I'm not half the general my father is. But I don't think you need to be removed from combat, at least not permanently. You need something else. Which is? Wish I knew. There should be a way to help you, a way to make it so you can think straight. I wish it were that easy, Kaladin said. But why do you care? What does it matter? You're my only bridge boy, Adolin said with a grin. Where would I get another? They've all started flying away. The grin faded. Besides, if we can find a way to help you, then maybe... maybe we can find a way to help her. His gaze drifted across the room toward Vale. She's fine, Kaladin said. She's found a balance. You've heard her explain how she thinks she's fine now. Like how you tell everyone you're fine? Adolin met his eyes. This isn't right, how she is. It hurts her. Over this last year I've seen her struggling, and I've seen hints that she's sliding, if more slowly now, toward worse depths.
She needs help. The kind I don't know if I can give her.
Their table hummed.
You are right, Pattern said. She hides it, but things are still wrong.
What does your surgeon's knowledge say, Cal? Adolin said. What do I do?
I don't know, Kaladin said. We are trained in dealing with physical ailments, not in what to do when someone is sick in the mind, other than send them to the Ardents.
Seems wrong.
Yeah, it does.
Kaladin frowned. He wasn't totally certain what the Ardents did with mentally ill patients.
Should I talk to them? Pattern asked. Ardents for help?
Maybe, Kaladin said.
Wit might know some way to help, too. He seems to know about all kinds of things like this.
Surely you can give some advice, Cal, Adolin said.
Let her know you care, Kaladin said. Listen to her. Be encouraging. But don't try to force her to be happy.
And don't let her be alone if you're worried about her.
He trailed off, then shot Adolin a glare. Adolin smirked. This hadn't just been about Shallan. Damnation. Had he let Adolin outsmart him? Maybe he should get something stronger to drink.
I'm worried about you both, Adolin said. I'm going to find a way to help. Somehow.
You're a storming fool, Kaladin said. We need to get you a spren. Why hasn't an order picked you up yet?
Adolin shrugged.
I'm not a good fit, I guess.
It's that sword of yours, Kaladin said. Shardbearers do better if they drop any old shards. You need to get rid of yours.
I'm not getting rid of Maya.
I know you're attached to the sword, Kaladin said, but you'd have something better if you became radiant. Think about how it would feel to...
I'm not getting rid of Maya, Adolin said. Leave it, bridge boy.
The finality in his voice surprised Kaladin, but before he could push further, Jor showed up to introduce his new bride, Krist, to Adolin, and mark Kaladin as the fourth fool if Adolin didn't immediately pull out a gift for the pair. Adolin hadn't merely shown up at his favorite wine house on the night of a wedding party, he'd come ready with a present. Vale eventually tired of her game and found her way back, more than a little tipsy. When Adolin joked about it, she made a wisecrack about being lucky she was Vale,
because Shallan really can't hold her alcohol.
As the evening progressed, Syl returned to proclaim she wanted to take up gambling. Kaladin felt increasingly glad for what Adolin had done. Not because Kaladin felt better, he was still miserable. Yet the misery did lessen around others, and it required Kaladin to keep up a semblance, to pretend. It might be a front, but he'd found that sometimes the front worked even on himself. The balance lasted for a good 2 hours, until, as the wedding party started to wane, Rock stepped up. He must have spoken to Adolin and Vale earlier, as they slipped out of the booth as soon as they noticed him, leaving Rock and Kaladin to speak in private. The look on Rock's face made Kaladin's stomach churn. So the time had arrived, had it? Of course it would happen today, of all days.
Lowlander, Rock said. My captain.
Do we have to do this today, Rock? Kaladin said. I'm not at my best.
Is what you said before, Rock said. And before that...
Kaladin braced himself, but nodded.
I have waited, as you asked, though these shards from Amaram for my people gather dust in their box, Rock said, his large hands pressed to the tabletop. Was good suggestion. My family was tired from travel. Best to spend time, let them know my friends. And Cord, she wanted to train. Ha! She says horny to traditions and Alethi traditions to be foolish. First shardbearer among my people was not Nuatoma, but young woman.
It could have been you, Rock, Kaladin said. Either with those shards you won, or as a radiant with your own spren. We need you. I need you.
You have had me. Now I need me. It is time to return, my Ula Makai, my captain.
You just said your traditions were foolish.
To my daughter, Rock pointed to his heart. Not to me, Kaladin. I lifted the bow.
You saved my life.
I made that choice because you are worth that sacrifice.
He reached across the table and rested his hand on Kaladin's shoulder.
But it is no sacrifice, unless I now go, as is right, to seek justice from my people. I would leave with your blessing, but I will leave either way.
Alone?
Ha! I would not have anyone to talk to. Song will go with me, and younger children. Cord and Gift, they wish to stay. Gift should not fight, but I fear he will. It is his choice, as this is my choice.
Moash is out there, Rock. He might attack you. If you won't fight, your family could be in danger. This gave Rock pause, then he grinned.
Scar and Dre both said they wanted to see my peaks. Perhaps I will let them help fly my family, so we do not have to walk all across stupid lowlands. Then we will have protection, yes?
Kaladin nodded. It was the best he could do, send an escort. Rock seemed to wait for something, and Kaladin realized it might be an offer to go with them, to see the Horn-Eater peaks that Rock had so often bragged about. The large cook never could get his story straight. Was the place a frigid wasteland or a lush and warm paradise? In any case, maybe Kaladin could go. Maybe he could fly off to adventure, take Rock to his home, then stay, or simply run away, find a battle somewhere. Dalinar couldn't stop him. No, Kaladin dismissed the thought immediately. Fleeing would be the action of a child. Plus, he couldn't go with Rock. Not merely because of the temptation to flee, but because he doubted he could hold back if Rock gave himself up to justice. The Horn Eater had been deliberately quiet about what punishment his people might impose as a consequence for his actions, but Kaladin found their entire tradition of birth order-based roles in life stupid. If Kaladin went, it would be to undermine his friend's decision. I give my blessing, Rock, Kaladin said. Both to you going, and to any who wish a short leave to accompany you. A Windrunner honor guard. You deserve that and more. And if you do encounter Moash...
Ha! Rock said, standing. He should try to come for me. That will let me get close enough to put my hands on neck and squeeze.
You don't fight.
That is not fighting. Is exterminating. Even Cook can kill rat he finds in his grain.
He grinned, and Kaladin knew him well enough to realize it was a joke. Rock held out his arms for an embrace.
Come, give me farewell.
Feeling like he was in a trance, Kaladin stood. Will you return, if you can, after? Rock shook his head.
This thing I have done here with all of you, he is the end. When we meet again, I suspect it shall not be in this world, this life.
Kaladin embraced his friend. One final crushing Horn-Eater hug. When they pulled apart, Rock was crying but smiling.
You gave me back my life, he said. Thank you for that, Kaladin, bridge leader. Do not be sad that now I choose to live that life.
You go to imprisonment or worse.
I go to the gods, Rock said.
He held up his finger.
There is one who lives here, one Afaliki. He is powerful god, but tricky. You should not have lost his flute.
I don't think Wit is a god, Rock. He tapped Kaladin's head.
Airsick as always.
He grinned, bowing in a sweeping, deferential way Kaladin had never seen from him before. Following that, Rock retreated to meet Song at the door and left. Forever. Kaladin slumped into his seat. At least he wouldn't be around to see Kaladin removed from his post. Rock could safely spend the rest of his days, short or long, pretending that his captain, his Ulla Makai, had remained strong all his days.
13. Another Hunt. Advanced fabrials are created using several different techniques. Conjoined fabrials require a careful division of the gemstone and the spren inside. If performed correctly, the two halves will continue to behave as a single gemstone. Note that rubies and flame spren are traditional for this purpose, as they have proven the easiest to divide and the quickest in response times. Other types of spren do not split as evenly, as easily, or at all. Lectron Fabrial Mechanics, presented by Navani Kolin to the Coalition of Monarchs, Yirithiru, Yesevan, 1175. The morning after the wedding party, Shallan had to deal with Vale's alcohol abuse. Again. Her head throbbed, and much of the late night was a blur in her mind. Storming woman. Fortunately, with some stormlight and some herbs for headaches, she was feeling better by the time she finished meetings with her accountants and ministers. She was wife to a high prince, and though their lands in Alethkar were under enemy control, she and Adolin had a tenth of Yirithiru to tend. Considering Shallan's radiant duties, they'd put several trustworthy women in control of finances, their husbands overseeing police and guards. The meeting mostly involved Radiant dispensing a few decisions and Shallan auditing the accounts. She'd have more to do in the future, but for now things were in hand. Adolin said she was supposed to be taking some time off, following the mission, anyway. He was using that time to go ride horses. Once the scribes withdrew from her audience chamber, Shallan found herself alone, and for the first time in weeks, she didn't have a role to play. She went through her letters and spanreed communications for a while, and eventually froze on a certain one that had arrived a day before she returned. The deal is set and arranged. The spren will come. She held this one for a moment, then burned it. Feeling a chill, she decided she didn't want to be alone in her room any longer, so went to visit her brothers. Their quarters weren't far from hers. Jushu was the only one there when she arrived, but he let her in and chatted with her about her mission. Then, as usually happened when she visited, Shallan found her way to the room's hearth to draw. It felt natural. Visiting her brothers didn't necessarily mean talking to them the entire time. She nestled in the blankets beside the hearth, and for a blessed few minutes could imagine she was home in Yaakoved. In her fantasy, a fire crackled in the hearth. Nearby, her stepmother and her father chatted together with some visiting ardents, men and women of the church, which meant her father was being well-behaved. Shallan was allowed her sketchbook, as father loved to show off her skill. Eyes closed, she drew the hearth, each brick engraved in her mind from the many times she'd drawn here. Good days, warm days.
"Hey, what are you drawing?" Jushu asked. "Is it the hearth from home?"
She smiled, and though the real Jushu had spoken, she incorporated him into her mental image. One of her four older brothers, because in this memory, she still had four. Jushu and Wikim were twins, though Jushu laughed more than Wikim did. Wikim was thoughtful, and Balat, he would sit in the chair nearby, pretending to be confident. Helleran was back, and Balat always puffed up when the eldest Davar brother was around. She opened her eyes and glanced at the little creation spren gathering around her, imitating mundane things. Her mother's tea kettle, the fireplace poker, objects from her home in Yaakoved, not objects here,
Somehow they responded to her imaginings. One in particular made her feel cold, a necklace chain slinking across the ground. In truth, those days at home had been terrible times, times of tears and screams and a life unraveling. It was also the last time she could remember her entire family together. Except, no, that wasn't the entire family. This memory had happened after Shallan had killed her mother. Confront it, she thought at herself, angry. Don't ignore it. Pattern moved across the floor of the room, here in Urethiru, spinning among the dancing creations, Bren. She'd been only 11 years old, 7 years ago now, and if that timeline was correct, she must have begun seeing Pattern as a young child, long before Yasna had first encountered her Spren. Shallan didn't remember her first experiences with Pattern, other than the distinct image of summoning her shard blade to protect herself as a child. She had excised all such memories. No, they're here, Vale thought, deep within Shallan. She couldn't see those memories, didn't want to see them. As she shied away from them, something dark shifted inside her, growing stronger, formless. Shallan didn't want to be the person who had done those things. That person could not be loved. She gripped her pencil in tight fingers, the drawing half finished in her lap. She'd buckled down and forced herself to read studies on other people with fragmented personas. She'd found only a handful of mentions in medical texts, though the accounts implied people like her were treated as freaks, even by the Ardents. Oddities to be locked away in the darkness for their own good, studied by academics who found the cases novel in their bizarre nature and giving insight to the addled mind of the psychotic. It was clear that going to such experts with her problems was not an option. Memory loss was apparently common to these cases, but the rest of what Shallan experienced seemed distinctly different. Importantly, she wasn't experiencing continued memory loss, so maybe she was fine. She'd stabilized. Everything was getting better. Surely it was. Storms, Jushu said. Shallan, that's some weird stuff you've drawn. She focused on the sketch, which she'd drawn poorly since her eyes had been closed. It took her a second to notice that in the fireplace back home, she'd drawn burning souls. One might have mistaken them for flame spren, but for the fact that they looked so similar to her and her three brothers. She snapped the sketchbook closed. She wasn't back in Yakaved. The hearth before her now had no flames. It was a depression with a heating fabrial resting in it, set into the wall of a Urethiru room. She had to live in the present. Jushu was no longer the plump, readily smiling boy from her memories. He was an overweight man with a full beard who had to be watched almost constantly, lest he steal something and try to pawn it for gambling money. They'd twice caught him trying to remove the heating fabrial. The way he smiled at her was a lie. Or maybe he was simply trying the best he could to remain upbeat. Almighty knew she understood that. Nothing to say? He asked. No quip? You almost never make wisecracks anymore. You aren't around enough for me to make sport of, she said. And no one else is quite as inspiring in their incompetence. He smiled, but winced, and Shallan immediately felt ashamed. The joke was too accurate. She couldn't act like when they'd been kids. Then, their father had been a great unifying enemy, making their gallows humor a way to cope. She worried about them drifting apart, so she visited, almost defiantly. Jushu rose to get some food, and Shallan wanted to try another joke. She let him go instead. With a sigh, she rummaged in her satchel and brought out ELA's little notebook. She was piecing some of its meanings together. For instance, ELA's spies had caught members of the Ghost Bloods talking about a new route through the Sea of Lost Lights. That was the place she and the others had traveled in Shadesmar a year back. Indeed, an entire 3 pages were filled with locations from the mysterious world of the Spren. "I saw a map," ELA had written, "in the things of the Ghost Blood we captured, and should have thought to copy it, for it was lost in the fire. Here is what I remember." Shallan made some notes at the bottom of ELA's crude map. Whatever skills in politics the woman had possessed, they'd been offset by a dearth of artistic ability. But perhaps Shallan could find some actual maps of Shadesmar and compare? The door opened, admitting Balat and a friend returning from their duties as guardsmen, though Shallan's back was to the group. From the quiet voices, Elita, Balat's wife, had met them somewhere in the hallway and was laughing at something Balat said. Over the last year, Shallan had grown surprisingly fond of the young woman. As a child, Shallan remembered being jealous of anyone who might take her brothers away. But as an adult, she saw better. Elita was kind and genuine. And it took a special person to love a member of the Devar family. Shallan continued her study of the book, listening with half an ear as Balat and Elita chatted with their friend. Elita had encouraged Balat to find an occupation, though Shallan wasn't certain becoming a guardsman was the best match for him. Balat had a tendency to enjoy the pain of other creatures a little too much. Balat, Elita, and his friend made their way to the other room, where a cooling fabrial kept some meats and curries chilled for meals. Their life was growing so convenient, and it could be even more so. Shallan's elevation to wife of a high prince could have awarded this home dozens of servants. Her brothers, however, had grown distrustful of servants, and they had grown accustomed to living without in the lean days. Besides, these fabrials did the work of a dozen people. No need for someone to chop or carry wood. No need for a fresh trip to the tower kitchens each day. Almost, Shallan feared, Navani's artifabrians would make them all lazy. As if having servants hasn't already made most light eyes lazy, Shallan thought. Focus. Why are the Ghost Bloods so interested in Shadesmar? Vale? Any thoughts? Vale frowned, absently turned around to put her back to the wall, then tucked her foot through the strap of her satchel to prevent it from being pulled away. When she became Vale, the colors in the room muted. The colors didn't change, but her perception shifted. Shallan would have described those strata lines as rust-colored, but to Vale they were just red. Vale kept one eye on the door to the balcony. Balat, Elita, and Jushu had all moved out there and were joking with that other guardsman. Laughter Spren moved in front of the door. Who was this friend? Shallan hadn't bothered to check. Sorry, Shallan thought. I was distracted. Vale studied the words in the notebook, picking out the relevant pieces. Maps, names of places, discussions of the cost of moving items through Shadesmar. Shallan's first mission for the Ghost Bloods, back when Vale had been no more than a drawing in a notebook, had been to spy on Amaram, who had been trying to work out how to find Urithiru and the Oath Gates. The Oath Gates, though primarily used to quickly move troops and supplies, had another function. They had the ability to send people back and forth into Shadesmar, a usage that Dalinar's scholars and Radiance had slowly managed to unlock during the past year. Was that what Moraes had wanted? Vale saw the pieces of something grand in Moraes' moves. Find the Oath Gates, attempt to secure unfettered, perhaps exclusive, access to Shadesmar. Along the way, try to remove rivals like Yasna, then recruit a Radiant who could look into Shadesmar, finally attack other factions who were trying to discover the secrets. She would have to... Wait, that voice. Vale's head jolted up. The guard her brothers were talking to. Damnation! Vale snapped the book closed and tucked it in the pocket of her dress, then stood and had Shallan make her hair red again, though Vale kept control. She peeked out onto the balcony to check, but she already knew she'd find Moraes there. He stood tall, with his peculiarly scarred face, wearing a gold and black uniform like Balad. Those were colors of the Sabareal princedom, the house Shallan had chosen to align with before marrying into the Colins. She'd once seen Moraes in a similar uniform, serving Iele and her house a year ago. Moraes didn't fit the uniform. Not that it was poorly tailored. He was simply wrong in it. He was at once too lofty and too jagged a person for the job. Predatory, where a guardsman should be obedient, yet also refined, when being a guardsman was one of the more lowly jobs for a light eyes. He saw her, of course. Moraes always watched the doors. She'd learned the trick from him. He didn't break character, laughing at what Balat said, but he didn't fake nearly as well as Shallan could. He couldn't keep the haughty tone from his laugh or the bite from his grin. He didn't reside in the character. He wore it as a costume. Vale folded her arms and lounged by the doorway. A cold breeze blew in off the mountains, making her shiver. Moraes and the boys pretended not to be cold, though their breath puffed in front of them, and cold spren grew like spikes on the balcony railing. Odd how in this tower it could feel so much warmer inside, even if you left the door open. Indeed, Elita soon made an excuse and went in, passing Vale with a smile and a wave, which Shallan returned. Vale kept her attention on Moraes. He clearly wanted her to see him interacting with her brothers. He rarely used overt threats, but this was a warning. He had been the one to bring the young men here safely, a reward for her services rendered. What he had given her, he could remove. As a guardsman, he'd train each day with the sword near Balat. Accidents happened. Shallan panicked slightly at this discovery, but Vale could play this game, even if the pieces were people she loved. We need to be ready to make a move, Radiant thought, to put our brothers where they will be safe. Vale agreed. Did such a place exist? Or instead, should she gather a few pieces of her own to use? She needed information about the Ghost Bloods and about Moraes himself. Despite their time working together, she knew next to nothing about the man. She was curious to see how Moraes would create an opportunity for the two of them to speak together alone. It would be strange if he, supposedly a lowly, light-eyed soldier, were to request time with Shallan. After a short conversation, Moraes said, I do admire your view here, Balat. I wish I merited a balcony room. Look at those mountains. Next time I walk the gardens below, I'll glance up and see if I can find you. Regardless, for now I should be returning to my quarters. He pretended to see Shallan there for the first time and hastily bowed to her. It was a fair effort, but overdone. She nodded to him as he retreated through their rooms and left. He'd want to meet her in the gardens, but she didn't intend to rush off to do his bidding. Balat, she said. That man. Have you known him long?
What was that, small one?
Balat turned toward her. During their first months together, talking to him had felt so awkward. Balat expected her to be the same timid girl who had left, searching for Yasna. Being with them had made Shallan realize how different she'd become in their months apart. It had been a fight, strangely, not to backslide when around these three. It wasn't that she wanted to be the younger, timid version of herself, but it was familiar in ways these new versions of her were not. "That man," Vale said. "What's his name?"
"We call him Gobby," Balat said. "He's old to be in training, but with the call out for new soldiers, lots of people who haven't really held a sword before are joining up."
"Is he good?" Vale asked.
"Gobby? Nah. He's fine, I mean, but makes a lot of mistakes. Almost chopped a man's arm off by accident last week. Captain Tullanon laid into him for that one, I'll tell you."
He chuckled, but Vale's unamused face made him trail off. She became Shallan and smiled belatedly, but her brothers left to go eat. She watched them chatting together and felt something stir inside her. Regret. They'd found an equilibrium as a family, but she wasn't certain she'd ever get used to being the adult in the room when they were together. It made her want to go bother Adolin. She thought she could pick him out below, riding Dalinar's horse on the field they'd dedicated to the animals. But she wouldn't interrupt him. Spending time with the Rashadium was one of the purest joys of Adolin's life. Best to go attend Marais, as he wanted. Garden was too grand a term by far for the small field beneath the windows to her brother's quarters. Yes, some of the Alethi gardeners had begun growing shale bark ridges or other ornamental plants here, but the cold weather stunted growth. The result, even with the occasional use of a heating fabrial, was little more than a network of colored mounds on the ground, not the gorgeous cultivated walls of a true garden. She picked out only two small lifespren. Marais was a dark pillar on the far side, surveying the frosted mountain peaks. Vale didn't try to sneak up on him. She knew he'd sense her coming. He seemed to be able to do that, no matter how little sound she made. It was a trick she'd been trying to replicate. Instead, she stepped up beside him. She'd fetched her hat and coat, the latter buttoned against the cold, but she'd covered that and her face with the illusion of a guard in Sabariel's army, in case someone saw the two of them meeting.
"You," Marais said without looking at her, "are to be commended again, little knife. The Sons of Honor are basically defunct. The few remaining members have fled into hiding, separately, with Dalinar's soldiers restoring order in the war camps. There is little chance of the infestation restarting."
"One of your operatives killed Ielay," Vale said, trying to pick out what Marais was looking at. He was staring intently, tracking something out there. She saw only snow and slopes.
"Yes," Marais said. "I don't like the idea of someone watching over my shoulder," Vale said. "It says you don't trust me." "Should I trust you three? I'm under the impression that at least part of you isn't fully committed."
She finally picked out what Marais was watching, a small dot of color soaring through one of the canyons. His pet chicken, the green one. Marais whistled sharply, and the sound echoed below. The creature turned in their direction.
"You must decide," Marais said to her, "how long you are going to continue this flirtation, Vale. You tease us. Are you a ghost blood or not? You enjoy the benefits of our organization, but refuse to get the tattoo."
"Why would I want something that could reveal me?"
"Because of the commitment it represents. Because of the permanence."
He eyed her, noting her illusion.
"Of course, with your powers, nothing is permanent, is it? You deal exclusively in the ephemeral."
He held up his arm as the chicken returned, fluttering its wings as it landed, its talons clutching his coat. The chicken was one of the strangest varieties Vale had ever seen,
with that large hooked beak and those bright green feathers. It carried something in its mouth, a small furry creature. It could have been a rat, but the look was wrong. "What is that?" Vale asked. "What did it catch?"
"A mole," Moraes said.
"A what?"
"Like a rat, but different. You know the word? Mole? An informant? Comes from these creatures, which live in Shinovar and dig into places they're not wanted. They've made their way across Aesir over the centuries, then into the mountains."
"Whatever," Vale said. The scarred man eyed her, a hint of a smile on his lips.
"Shallan will find this interesting, Vale. Do you not want to ask, for her sake? An invasive species from Shinovar, slowly making a home in the mountains, where Rosharan creatures cannot live. They lack the fur, the adaptations, you see."
Shallan emerged as he said it, so she took a memory. She needed to draw the little beast. How did it survive in this cold? Surely there wasn't anything to eat up here.
"A hunter knows the advantages his prey relies upon to hide and to thrive," Moraes said. "Shallan understands this. She seeks to understand the world. You should not dismiss this kind of knowledge so quickly, Vale. It has applications you may not anticipate, but which will serve you both well."
Damnation. Shallan hated talking with him. She found herself wanting to nod, to agree with him, to learn from him. Radiant whispered truth. Shallan had lived her childhood with a father who had been paternal in all the wrong ways and none of the right ones. In Moraes, a part of her saw a substitute, strong, confident, and, most importantly, willing to offer praise. His chicken held its prey with one foot, eating almost like a person did with their hands. The thing was so strange, so alien. It stood upright, like no other beast Shallan had studied. When it chirped at Moraes, it sounded almost like it was talking, and she swore she could occasionally make out words. It was like a tiny parody of a person. She glanced away from the brutal display of the feasting chicken, though Moraes watched the creature with an air of approval. "I can't join the Ghost Bloods fully," she said, "unless I know what it is you're trying to accomplish. I don't know your motivations. How can I align with you until I do?"
"Surely you can guess," Moraes said. "It's about power, obviously."
She frowned. So, was it really that simple? Had she imagined depths to this man that weren't there? Moraes continued to hold his chicken on one arm, fishing in his pocket with the other hand. He took out a diamond brome, then handed it to her, wrapping her fingers around it. Her fist shone from within.
"Power," Moraes said. "Portable, easily contained, renewable. You hold the energy of a storm in your hand, Vale. That raw energy, plucked from the heart of the raging tempest. It is tamed, not only a safe source of light, but of power that those with particular interests and abilities can access."
"Sure," Vale said, emerging again. "At the same time, it's practically worthless, because anyone can get it. The gemstones are the valuable part."
"That's small thinking," Moraes said. "The stones are but containers, no more valuable than a cup. Important, yes, if you wish to carry liquid across the dry expanse, but the value comes solely from what it contains."
"What kind of dry expanse would you cross?" Vale asked. "I mean, you can always simply wait for a storm."
"Locked into your conditioned way of thinking," Moraes said, shaking his head. "I thought you'd be able to see bigger, to dream bigger. Tell me, When you traveled Shadesmar, how valuable was a little stormlight?
Very, she said. So, this is about bringing stormlight to Shadesmar? What do the Spren have that you want?
That, little knife, is the wrong question.
Blast. Vale felt her temper rising. Hadn't she proven herself? How dare he treat her as if she were some lowly apprentice? Fortunately, they had Radiant to guide them here. She learned lessons Vale refused to. Radiant didn't mind being treated like an apprentice. Radiant liked learning. She had Shallan bleed their hair to blonde, though they were still wearing a man's face, and folded her hands behind her back, standing up straighter.
Ask a better question.
Nalathis, Radiant said. Scadarial. What are they?
Nalathis. Scadrial.
He spoke the words with a different accent.
Where are they? That's an excellent question, Radiant. Suffice it to say, they are places in Shadesmar where our stormlight, so easily captured and transported, would be a valuable commodity.
Curious. She knew so little of Shadesmar, but the Spren had vast cities, and she knew Stormlight was prized there. That's why you wanted to get to Urithiru before Yasna. You knew the Oathgates would offer easy access to Shadesmar. You want to control commerce, travel, to these other places.
Excellent, Moraes said. Trade to Roshar through Shadesmar has been historically difficult, as there is only one stable access point, one controlled by the Horn Eaters, who have been unpleasant to deal with. Yet Roshar has something that so many other people in the Cosmere want. Free, portable, easy to access power.
There has to be more, Radiant said. What is the catch? The problem with the system? You wouldn't be telling me this if there weren't a problem.
He glanced at her. Excellent observation, Radiant. I find it unfortunate we don't normally get along.
We would get along much better if you were more straightforward with people, Radiant said. Your type turns my stomach.
What? Moraes said. Me? A simple guardsman?
One who has a reputation for being clumsy, for nearly killing other guardsmen. If you harm Shallan's brothers, Moraes.
We don't harm our own,
Moraes said.
So remain one of us, that indicated.
Radiant hated his games, though Vale delighted in them. For now, however, Radiant remained in control. She was making progress. The catch? She asked, holding up the broom. The problem?
This power is something we call investiture, Moraes said. Investiture manifests in many forms, tied to many places and many different gods. It is bound to a specific land, making it very difficult to transport. It resists. Try to carry this too far, and you'd find it increasingly difficult to move as it became increasingly heavy. The same limitation restrains people who are themselves heavily invested. Radiance, Spren, anyone connected to Roshar is bound by these laws and cannot travel farther than Ashen or Braze. You are imprisoned here, Radiant.
A prison as large as three planets, Radiant said. Forgive me if I don't feel confined.
Vale, however, was hiding.
Things like this daunted her. Such large-scale ideas and problems. Shallan, though. Shallan wanted to soar, learn, discover. And to find that she was restricted in that discovery, even if she'd never known about the restriction, did bother her.
Moraes took the broom back. This gemstone cannot go where it is needed,
A more perfect gemstone could contain the light long enough to go off-world, but there is still the connection problem. This little flaw has caused untold trouble, and the one who unlocks the secret would have untold power. Literal power, Radiant. The power to change worlds.
So you want to unravel the secret, Radiant said.
I already have, Moraes said, making a fist. Though putting the plan into motion will be difficult. I have a job for you.
We don't want another job, Radiant said. It is time for this association to be finished.
Are you certain? Are all three of you certain?
Radiant drew her lips to a line, but she knew the truth. No, they were not certain. Reluctantly, she let Shallan emerge, hair bleeding to its natural auburn red.
I have news for you, Shallan said. Ja Anat contacted me while I was away. She agreed to your terms and is sending one of her spren to the tower, where it will investigate your members for a possible bond.
Those weren't the terms, he said. She was to promise me a spren to bond.
Considering where we started last year, Shallan said, you should take what you can get. It's been difficult to contact her lately. I think she's worried about how people are treating Renarin.
No, Moraes said. Odium watches. We must be careful. I will accept these terms. Have you any other reports?
ELA's agents have a spy close to Dalinar, Shallan said. So the Sons of Honor might not be completely stamped out yet.
An interesting line of reasoning, Moraes said. But you're wrong. The Sons of Honor don't have an agent close to Dalinar. They simply managed to intercept some communications from one of our agents, who is close to Dalinar.
Ah, that explained a few things. ELA didn't have the reach to get close to Dalinar, but if she'd found a way to intercept intelligence from the Ghostbloods, the result would be the same. Moraes didn't lie to her, as far as she'd been able to determine. So,
I don't need to worry about two spies then, Shallan said. Only the one you have watching me, the one who killed ELA. It's one of Adolin's guards, isn't it?
Don't be silly. We have no interest in men such as that. They offer us nothing.
Who then?
I cannot betray this secret, Moraes said. Let's just say that Lightweavers fascinate me, and leave it at that. And you should not fear if I did keep someone close to you. Such a person could be an aid in times of need. Yatil did the same for me.
Shallan fumed. He all but promised the Ghostblood spy was among her Lightweavers, which did make sense. Moraes would want someone who could watch Shallan in places a soldier might not be able to reach. One of the deserters, then? Or Ishna? One of the newer squires? The idea made her sick.
Yatil has reported to Master Thydakar, Moraes said, and he has accepted, after some initial anger, that we will not be able to control the Oath Gates. I explained that there at least is a calming wind in this, like the riddance of a storm. With Dalinar controlling the Oath Gates, he can prosecute the war against Odium.
And that helps your cause?
We have no interest in seeing the enemy rule this world, Shallan. Master Thydakar wishes only to secure a method for gathering and transporting Stormlight. Moraes held his brome up again. Like a miniature sun, beside the real one.
Why attack the Sons of Honor, though? Shallan asked. At first I understood. They were trying to find Urithiru before us. But now? What threat was ELA?
Now that is a brilliant question, Moraes said, and she couldn't suppress a thrill from Vale at being praised by him.
The secret has to do with Gavilar, the old king. What was he doing?
The same old question, Shallan said. I spent weeks researching his life under Yasna's tutelage. She seemed to think he was after shardblades.
His aspirations were not nearly so lowly as that, Moraes said. He recruited others, promising them a return to the old glories and powers. Some, like Amaram, listened because of these promises, but for the same reason were as easily lured by the enemy. Others were manipulated through their religious ideals. But Gavilar, what did he truly want?
I don't know. Do you?
Immortality, in part. He thought he could become like the heralds. In his quest, he discovered a secret. He had void light before the Everstorm. He carried it from Braes, the place you call Damnation. He was testing the movement of light between worlds, and one close to him might have answers. At any rate, we couldn't risk ELA or the Sons of Honor recovering these secrets.
Moraes' chicken finished its meal. Though it had picked at and eaten the flesh, in the end it swallowed the rest of the corpse whole. Then it fluffed its feathers and hunkered down. Shallan didn't have a lot of experience with the creature, but it seemed to dislike the cold. So odd how Moraes flaunted it. But she supposed that was part of who he was. He was never content blending in. Most would probably consider keeping strange exotic animals a quirk. Shallan couldn't help but see more to it. Moraes collected trophies. She'd seen many odd things in his possession. She blinked and took another memory of the chicken on his arm, receiving a scratch at its neck.
There is so much out there, little knife, Moraes said. Things that will rock your understanding, expand your perspective, and make into pebbles what once seemed mountains. The things you could know, Shallan. The people you could collect in your notebook, the sights you could see.
Tell me, she said, finding an unexpected hunger within. Let me see them. Let me know them.
These things require effort and experience, Moraes said. I could not simply be told of them, and neither can you. I have given you enough for now. To go further, you must hunt the secrets. Earn them.
She narrowed her eyes at him. All right. What do you want this time? He grinned in his predatory way. You always make me want to do the things you ask, Shallan said. You tempt me not just with rewards, but with the secrets or the dangers themselves. You knew I'd be intrigued by what Amaram was studying. You knew I'd want to stop ELA because of the threat she presented to Adolin. I always end up doing what you want. So what is it this time? What are you going to make me do?
You become a hunter in truth. I have known from the beginning your potential.
He looked to her, light violet eyes lingering on her still red hair.
There is a man. Restaris. You know the name?
I've heard of him. He was connected to the Sons of Honor. Though she might have heard the name before getting ELA's book, it was written several times in there. The woman had been trying to contact him.
He was their leader at one point, Moraes said. Perhaps their founder, though we aren't certain. Either way, he was involved from the beginning, and he knew the extent of what Gavilar was doing. Restaris is perhaps the only living person who did.
Great. You want me to find him?
Oh, we know where he is, Moraes said. He has asked for, and been granted, asylum in a city no other ghost blood has been able to enter.
A place you can't enter? Shallan asked. Where is security that tight?
The fortress
named Lasting Integrity, Moraes said. Home and capital city of the honors, Spren, in Shadesmar. Shallan let out a long whistle of appreciation. The chicken, curiously, mimicked it. This is your mission, Moraes said. Find your way to Lasting Integrity. Get in, then find Rastaris. There should be no more than a handful of humans in the city. In fact, he might be the only one. We don't know. How am I supposed to accomplish that? You are resourceful, Moraes said. You and yours have connections to the Spren that no other ghost blood has been able to manage so far. His eyes flickered to Pattern, who sat on her coat, silent as usual when others were talking. You will find a way.
Assuming I am able to do this, Shallan said. What should I do with the man? I'm not going to kill him.
Don't be so hasty, Moraes said. When you find him, you'll know what to do.
I doubt that.
Oh, you will. And once you successfully return from this mission, your reward will be, as always, something for which you hunger. Answers. All of them.
She frowned.
We will hold nothing back, Moraes said. Everything we know becomes yours after this.
Shallan folded her arms, weighing her desires. For well over a year now, she'd told herself that she only continued with the Ghostbloods to find out their secrets. But Vale liked being part of them. The thrill of the intrigue, even the suspense of potentially being found out. Shallan, however, had always been seeking answers. Real secrets. Surely even Jasnah couldn't be too angry with Shallan. She was infiltrating them, seeking to find their answers. Once Shallan learned everything the Ghostbloods had been hiding, she could go to Jasnah. What good would it do to pull out when the ultimate prize was so close?
I sense another reason you're doing this, Shallan, Radiant thought at her. What is it? What aren't you sharing with us?
Aren't you afraid? Shallan asked Moraes, ignoring Radiant.
If I know your secrets, you'll no longer have power to keep stringing me along. You won't be able to keep bribing me.
If you do this, little knife, he said, you won't need to be bribed any longer. Once you complete the mission with Rastaris and return, you may ask me any questions, and I will answer with what I know. About the world. About the Radiance. About other places. About you and your past.
He thought to tease that last one. But at it, Shallan shuddered, trembling deep inside. Formless grew stronger each time she thought about that.
After getting your answers, Moraes continued, if you decide you no longer desire our association, you may leave us. As Radiant wishes. She is weak, but everyone has weakness within them. If you succumb to yours, then so be it.
She folded her arms, considering.
I'm being sincere, Moraes said. I cannot promise you will be safe if you leave. Other members of the organization do not like you. I do promise that I will not hunt you or yours. Nor will my Babsk. We will discourage others.
An easy promise, Shallan said, because you are certain I will never leave the Ghostbloods.
Find a reason to visit the Honor Spren, Moraes said. Then we shall talk.
He lifted his arm and threw the bird off toward another hunt. Shallan gave no promise, but as she walked away, she knew he had her. They'd been hooked as soundly as any fish. For in Moraes's mind were answers about the nature of the world and its politics, but more beyond, about Shallan. The Devar House steward had belonged to the Ghostbloods. It was possible Shallan's father had as well.
Marais had never been willing to speak of that, but she had to think they'd been grooming her and her family for over a decade. He knew the truth about Shallan's past. There were holes in her childhood memories. If they did what he asked, Marais would fill them. And maybe then, at long last, Vale could force Shallan to become complete. 14. Voice. All gemstones leak stormlight at a slow rate, but so long as the crystal structure remains mostly intact, the Spren cannot escape. Managing this leakage is important, as many Fabrials also lose stormlight through operation. All of this is tied up in the intricacies of the art, as is understanding one last vital kind of Spren, logic Spren. Lecture on Fabrial Mechanics, presented by Navani Kolin to the Coalition of Monarchs, Urethiru, Yesavan, 1175. The palace at Kolinar had undergone a dramatic transformation to a new form, so to speak.